And Michael has already joined us, and so I'm going to start out saying happy Eternal Day, sweetie.
Well, thank you. Thank you for making that awesome omelet this morning for my eternal day. And it's a great start for the best year yet of my eternal life. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I just caught a little bit of the conversation about doing nothing. And there's a caveat to that in the Course in Miracles. And I don't know, that might have been brought up, but I didn't hear the whole conversation. But the Course says, you need take thought for nothing. Once you have accepted the Creator's plan as the one function that you would fulfill, you need take thought for nothing except the only purpose that you would fulfill. So be about your Father's business, fulfill your purpose. And so it's in that context, it's you don't have to be concerned about anything, just fulfill your purpose. Act on what your purpose is. And all will be well. And beyond that, Jeannie, did you have a question that somebody had written in?
Yes, I did. And it is, let me open my email back up. They wanted your take on a particular verse in the scriptures, and it was, good morning, Michael and Jeannie. Thank you for all that you do and who you are. There are no words to express the appreciation and gratitude for the work that you do. What is your take on, quote, then Jesus said to them, therefore render to, we read that one yesterday. Render to Caesar what is
Yes.
Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And we addressed that one yesterday.
I think this one had to do with the storm.
It did. It had to do with when Yeshua calmed the storm, the wind and the waves, and how the disciples, wondered how he could do that. And your take on that whole story and
Okay.
events.
All right. Well, two things come to mind as I think about that particular story. One is, there's a passage that says, without a parable, he did not speak. And Aramaic parable means parallel meaning. So, or I think the word is actually, he did not teach. And so, was there a literal storm? And was this a story about a literal physical calamity going on? Well, it may well be that it was literal. And I think that because we are a part of the elemental forces of nature, that we have a great deal to do with disturbances in the field of the earth. And therefore, when we can bring ourselves to that centered, connected, calm place, we can have an impact on that. But I think perhaps for most people at this stage of their development, the more important aspect of that story is the parable. And the parable is one, and most people, the storms they face, there aren't that many people that are going to be out in a boat at some point, and gee, they're going to be in a life-threatening storm. But there's sure a lot of people that are in a life-threatening storm from within themselves, their own emotional nature, their own trauma and drama. In fact, we've talked over the last 5 years since Arya came into our world, how we've worked with her and worked with her and, helping her to build the brain cells. And she's been having some storms of her own in relationship. We don't see that here when she comes to visit with us, but in relationship to her mom and dad, she's seeing some of those storms, and she's talked about how, oh, I just had all of this emotion come up. I think that's the storm that's really important to learn to calm. And if one takes the tools of Yeshua and puts them to work, then that storm is going to be calm. And calm to me in that context means I'm no longer going to substitute my perception based in something from the past, especially the storms of hostility or fear, for what's going on in the actuality in my world. I'm going to refrain from that. I'm going to calm that storm. I'm going to do my work, clean it up, and step into the world as a space of conscious act of present love, therefore bringing about a place of calm and serenity within the world. So that would be my take on that one. And beyond that, before I go on to anything else, sweetie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
Well, the only three hands up is Magda, Celinda, and Susan. So if one of you were wanting to talk to Michael again, if you would press one and then press it again, your hand will go down and then come back up. Otherwise, I'm just going to assume that your hand is still up from where you were talking to Dr. Kim.
Just breathe. Well, we take a moment.
A hand just went up, and it's Miss Julie. Are you on this side of the waters now? Miss Julie Matthews.
Hey, Julie, are you mute challenged? Hello, Julie.
I'm not sure what's happening. I unmuted her microphone, but it's spinning, so I'm not sure if she really got unmuted or not. Let me try it again.
And it might be that she's calling from Europe. There may be some signal delay.
Well, two other hands went up. So since Julie's isn't working, let me try Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Welcome, young lady. You with us, Susan? Are we having some...
Julie just unmuted me. Yeah.
Welcome.
I did put it up again. Happy Eternal Day, number one. Yeah,
accepted.
I have
Thank
it in
you.
My birthday calendar. So anyway, have a great day. That's wonderful.
Didn't plan.
And number two, just a piece of business. You sent me two books. I sent you some dough to cover it, but then I realized I didn't send you anything extra for the shipping. So the next time I get something from you, I'm going to just add it on.
We're absolutely, you had no need. We appreciate your support and we had no need for that payment at all, but thank you for sending it.
Oh, okay. And another little silly thing, except inside the Kabbalist book, and I've started it from the very first page.
Right.
Where you have an introduction down below a picture in black and white, and there's a phone number in there that isn't the radio show anymore. So I thought maybe you could tape, or people might like, you know, to have you change that number. I don't know whether it's easy to do or whether you've got a gazillion copies already printed.
Yeah, they're already printed, and it was printed back when we were using the earlier phone number, unfortunately. So that's, but that's a good thought that we could just manually change it. When we send books out, we'll make a note of that.
Yeah, I know. That's a real nuisance. But on the other hand, people might want to call in. And I wanted to ask you.
For sure.
I know you have a reason for putting your name in small letters. You don't capitalize your name. I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Well, my observation over the years has been that people tend to make any teaching related to the topics we're working with about the teacher, about, somebody who's superior to me. People still do that with Yeshua. You know, well, of course, he's the superior one. They totally ignore the fact that he said, the things I do, you can do in greater, like bigger things than me you're going to do, he says. But no... The non-being mind that's gotten a message from their power person that they're broken and they'll never be good enough and they'll never live, whatever all that stuff is, just plays that out. And so for me, putting my name in lowercase letters was simply the statement that this is about the work, it's not about me. That's all. That's simple.
My daughter was talking to me today about how being the dean of the cathedral has given her a kind of credibility that makes her more effective as a leader in some ways. And she was naming the ways, mainly to notice the gifts of other people, put people together, get them to know one another and work together. And she said, if I didn't have the title of dean, I might not be able to do that work. It isn't as if I'm strutting around, but
right.
It helps. And I was thinking it might help if you'd stop doing the little letters and put the big letters. You do put doctor there. You didn't take that out. And being a doctor is another testament to the work you've done and that you're qualified. And people want to know that. So it seems confusing to me to have you put it in small letters. Here I am a doctor, but I'm going to not really let you know because I'm going to put it in small letters. So anyway, just the thought, I noticed that you did that, and you do it on the website, too. So anyway, it just
I hear the thought.
Yeah.
I hear the thought. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So, and I have two other totally
and
unrelated things. Yeah.
Just on that topic. My, just trying to think of the way to say this. To me, the root of my authority in what I teach comes from what I teach,
mm-hmm.
not from any of the mechanisms of the world. And, you know, I'm really clear that there's nothing here to believe. Take the tools, use them, and watch what happens. They work. That's all. That's the authority
mm-hmm.
of it. Rather than anything else. So that's part of my thinking on it and why I chose many years
people
ago
won't
to
know that.
Because
people
tended to
that,
put
though.
It in the direction of, oh, you know, look, you're the teacher. No. The teacher that I'm here to point people to is within those people. You know, the
yeah.
authority for each person. My take would be that it comes from within them, and that the core that we're looking to get everybody to is to recognize that the master teacher for you is inside of you. It's not out here
right.
in
I
me
understand.
Or anybody else.
Yeah, and they would learn that, I think, along the way. Anyway, that's my thought.
Hopefully.
So, yeah.
Received. Thank you.
So, you gave me a mind shifter, and I worked on it for the entire, Dr. Kim gave a lot of time to it. I just wanted to give you an update, because I had a dream that showed that things are shifting, even though during the day that mind shifter shows up in just massive resistance to wanting to do what the mind shifter says is entirely possible and delightful.
Isn't that awesome that you get to face the massive Satan in you, the resistor, the one who wants to
yeah,
mislead
no kidding.
You and work through her?
Yeah. Right. Well, it's doing that. The mind shifter was sweet, pleasant, and desirable for me to be able to embrace my mother fully in love and to receive her embrace in return. So, besides thinking that that's never going to be possible and I don't even want it, I had a dream last night that Mom and I were sitting side by side, squished side by side on a stairwell, and she was screaming at me, facing me. I turned to face her and screamed at her, and then we started to laugh. And then everybody in the household, and there were lots of people in the household, began to laugh. And then it seemed as if everybody in the universe was laughing. And then I woke up. And so I'm telling you.
That's awesome.
It's having an, yeah, it's having an effect, but it's slow going during the day. Sorry about the coughing. Sorry, I'll try to.
Sounds like it's moving in the right direction. You know, you remind me of a young man who was at Heartland years ago, this goes back to the very early days at Heartland. He was actually on the support team for, I don't even remember now exactly, 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years. And about his second year there, he had started to drink. He was in his 30s when he came to Heartland. He had started to drink when he was, I forget now exactly, 13, 14, maybe even 12. I don't remember exactly, but really young. And then got into drugs. And from the time he started, 12, 13, 14, to when he came to Heartland in his 30s, he had never had a day where he drew a sober breath.
Oh, my God.
And his hate toward his father was just legion. I mean, he couldn't say a kind word about his father. And it was the second or third year that he was at Heartland. And I remember, I mean, I can see him. We were doing a still point session. So we're on mats on the floor and he's breathing. And after the still point session, he tells us about how he had this experience of his experiencing himself, not just as a body, but as an energy field. And that his energy field went down deep into the earth, like right through the floor of the heart center and deep into the earth. And wow. And from that state, all of a sudden, you know, he's laying, of course, on his back on a mat, breathing, and all of a sudden, he has this wonderful memory come up of his dad, who's laying on the floor on his back with him as a little kid, bouncing him and playing with him. First positive memory in the 2 or 3 or 4 years that he'd been at Heartland until that experience happened. And from there, he went home. He finished that season. He drove back. He lived in Ohio. We drove back to Ohio and just had a wondrous reunion with his father. And, you know, and once that memory came, all of a sudden, a flood of memories that had been suppressed because of hostility or fear, my explanation would be that he got into a state of rachma and all of a sudden unblocked what had been previously just been blocked from awareness. And who knows how far back the hostility or fear-based filter relates to mothers and daughters in your family system, and as you uncover those, what wondrous things will open.
I remember you told me about your dad, because I've talked about my mom and my resistance to allowing her in, and you said you understood that because you had a similar dynamic between you and your dad. And I
right.
don't remember whether you said you had worked through that or that's a work in progress. I'd love to hear about that.
My take is, at this stage, I feel a completeness with that. When I think of Dad, I think of how one of the things I always admired about my dad is he was there as a father. Some was pretty crappy, but he was there. And, you know, there were always vacations, and he was dedicated. And that's what comes to mind when I think of my dad now, as opposed to the fact that, you know, he was brought up in an abusive household and an abusive culture and was pretty physically abusive, aside from being emotionally abusive. So that's the main thing that comes up. Will there be other layers or memories with Dad from the abuse side? It wouldn't surprise me, but there's nothing present in my awareness of that now.
That's great.
So I don't know whether it's still a work in process or it's complete. I'll hold the space and hope that it's complete, and I'm willing for anything else that needs to come and be worked through.
If you were given the mind shifter you gave to me, would you be able to do it easily? That really is none of my business. I know, Michael.
Very easily. Yeah, I mean, if Dad were to be able to, I would love it if he would drive in the driveway today and we could get in the car and go out and go to the park and just hang. That would be awesome to me. And I could very easily see myself fully, physically holding him and embracing him totally and completely.
That's wonderful.
Nothing comes up paying attention right now to my breath. No inhibitor comes up in my breath. That doesn't mean there isn't any more there, you know, for me to perhaps still work through. But at this point, that's my my sense of and my I say sense and sensation of physically when I feel, you know, pay attention to my body as I think about that.
And if you think about yourself as a child at the age where he wasn't treating you so well, would you do it as that child? Because that's what I'm trying to do with my mind shifter, is to be the little kid. Because as an adult, I was able to be very good to my mother and take care of her physically and otherwise, because she was really disabled. Tiny, you know, give her baths and wash her hair and wash her back and rest her. I had to do everything, and it was easy.
Right.
And very nice. But going back to being the little kid when she was much bigger and more powerful, that's the part that I'm resisting. And
right.
Do you think you could do that with your dad?
Yeah, actually, I've had on a couple of occasions, there's one particular time, one of the places we used to go when we were kids, way up north, there was a lake called Halls Lake. And my mom and dad would rent a cabin, and we'd go up there and spend a couple of weeks in the summer. And a memory that's common, I don't know exactly what I would have been, maybe 2, 3, 4, I don't know, something like that. But I can remember sitting and just observing my father and just being totally in love, just totally in admiration. And I'm not sure what other adjectives, but that's basically what the sense of that was.
And there was no physical danger or a sense of it not being safe?
No, not in that memory.
Good. Okay, well, it's, you know, I'm doing just what you thought I shouldn't do if I saw your name in capital letters, which is to make you the authority on whether I can do my work. But I understand that if you said you were not able to do that or you were able to do that, that I would take that in. But this is my work.
Right.
I do understand that, and it's different from yours. So.
Well, I'll take this as an invitation as well, that I'll join you in that mind shifter and going to the next level of inquiry in my own body.
Well, that's very nice.
To do that piece of work. Yeah, I'll join you in that. And in joining you, joining the world in it, because, you know, the trauma and drama that have gone on between moms and dads and kids has been going on for just too long. It's time for it to be worked through.
Well, it sounds as if you may well have done it, but I'd be very interested in hearing what you do, and I'll keep at this.
You know, I actually did a piece of writing this morning, and I don't even know where it came from, but I come across a video where this man is talking about preachers and how, and he has several clips. It was a YouTube video. He has several clips of these preachers just raging. I mean, like raging at people. And what came clear to me in that, the piece of writing that I did, and actually I posted on Facebook, the piece that came was these people just haven't gotten the message that Yeshua came to bring a different perspective than, oh, we're going to punish the sinner. We're going to, you know, I mean, these preachers just rage against sinners and what they're, and, you know, they're supposedly pro-life, but they're ready to kill people over their, you know, not being pro-life type stance. It's like, gee, they just didn't get the message that Yeshua came, you know, the message was, I would have mercy, not this punishment. And that, you know, he came to sow a different frequency into the earth of our own, of our physiology and our psyche. And unfortunately, there are many people who didn't get that message. They think they're Christian, but they're really doing the Old Testament legalism and making a buck while they're doing it. But that message of, oh, wait a minute, he came to bring something different. Remember that woman that he caught in adultery? I mean, just like all these preachers have been screaming about, see, the Bible says these people should be killed. The Bible says these people. Mm-hmm. It's like, did you pay attention to where there was this woman caught in adultery and, quote unquote, the Bible said she should be killed? And did you see what he did? You know, like, that wasn't what story. He was about. And, you know, to mm-hmm. me, the idea is for actual Christianity to catch on rather than this legalism and this silliness that passes as religious. And any place that any of us as individuals can't bring that's our next piece of work. And what we can't bring that mind of love to, that active presence of love to, diminishes us. And it's time for us to get back to our full-fledged state of being. So I'll definitely join you in that.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Delighted, honored. It's a great invitation.
You're a good
Who knows support, what corners it will open up for either of us since we've joined in Vitality and each get to go to another level.
Well, you're a good sport. So I had one more question, and it's probably not appropriate, but I do notice what you post on Facebook. I
go
this
for it
is
anyway.
Something that is outside your bailiwick. It's about Marianne Williamson and the fact that she was never mentioned as a candidate in the Democratic Party. Dean Phillips, when he stepped up, all of a sudden we were talking about him in the newspapers. She was not mentioned. What is going on? What is that about? Do you have any idea? Is she known
is she
as a
running
nutcase
this time?
Or something? No, she's not. She's
I didn't,
dropped out
I,
of the
I wasn't
race.
Aware she was running.
She was. She was. That's right. You weren't aware. I was on her feed.
I mean, she ran in 2020.
No, she was running this time on the Democratic ticket. She knew it would be bad to be a third-party candidate and pull votes away from...
Where the nominee was, yeah.
Yeah. And she even had a debate with Dean Phillips. And it was a wonderful debate, and they were very much of like minds, very supportive of each other. It was like watching two enlightened human beings talking about the state of the world and the state of the country. But she
Sanity
was
had
never
struck politics, eh?
Say that again?
Sanity had struck politics.
Yes, but it was never publicized. Never in the major, like, New York Times. Nobody knew.
Right.
We were donating to her. We knew it was like pouring money down a drain, but I thought it wasn't because whoever she reaches, and we knew she didn't have a chance, but whoever listened to her would get it. They would get her what she was saying. But I wondered if you knew anything about that. And obviously, you were even further out of the loop than I was. And then she announced, well, it's time for me to drop out. I'm not getting anywhere. And this was a hard thing for her to deal with, but she did it in the Course in Miracles spirit of knowing that we just, as a country and a culture, we're not ready to have a person like her on the ballot. Anybody I spoke to who had heard of her said, oh, she's too woo-woo and she's this and that. She wasn't the least bit woo-woo. She
no, she's
knew
not.
Her politics, articulate, bright, heart
yes.
in the right place every single time. So anyway, that's my rant for the day.
Well, I don't know if you remember me mentioning her back in 2020 when she ran. She did do a debate that was one of the larger debates, and actually I think it was, I'm not remembering exactly the number, but something like 12 or 15 or 18 states where that debate was broadcast. She was the most Googled candidate out of that debate. I forget how many people were on the debate stage, but I remember that was like, you know, I didn't think back then that she'd ever really get anywhere because it's not the game at this point. But to me, she changed the conversation. She injected something into the country and into the conversation of politics that sooner or later will have its impact. It is, you know, it's like the leavening. She certainly brought it forward, and I admire her and acknowledge her for it.
Well, it seemed as if that was true back then, and you'd think she would have gotten further doing the leavening this time around, but it went backwards. At least superficially, the way I'm looking at it, she got less airtime, less notice this time than before.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that she got less, in that when she did make the splash she did make last time, I'm sure she brought up fear and offense in a lot of people who want business as usual, so I could see it wouldn't surprise me that they would put effort into suppressing her, where before she became publicly known, there was no reason to put any energy into it because nobody knew what she was saying or doing, because she could have changed the game significantly had her voice become louder.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, thanks for answering that question. This isn't a politics radio show, but I know you had mentioned her very favorably back then and more recently, too, early on, though, before people were getting on ballots and there were primaries being talked about.
Yeah, it would be nice to see her voice expanding farther.
Yeah.
This conversation, the leavening moving forward.
So I'm done, and I know you have other hands up. So thanks a
lot. All right, young lady, you have a blessed one.
Yeah, you too.
Joining you in that other project.
We'll
do some breathing
thanks.
On that when the show's over. All right. Take care.
Great.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right.
We have several hands up, but Julie is back on. Let's see if we can get her this time. Hello,
Great.
Miss Julie.
Let's see if we can get to talk to Julie. We haven't heard her voice in a while.
Hello?
Hey there, young
Hello?
Lady.
Hey.
Hello, you made it. We can hear you. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's so great to be on.
How are things in Spain?
They're really, really, really beautiful. Just beautiful. Very nice, warm day today. Beautiful water. Oh, I can't believe it, how beautiful it is.
Sweet.
I called to say happy Eternal Day also. And
Accepted.
Thank you. Doing, and I'm appreciating that you're doing the Kabura study. That's really wonderful. And I just texted Jeannie about 10 texts about Marianne Williamson that I thought she would get, but maybe I don't have her accurate text number. But anyway, Marianne Williamson is running. But all you have to do is Google Marianne Williamson 2024. And I don't think she's dropped out. I've been paying attention every day. She's being interviewed a lot more. The interviewers are really going with thoroughness, and letting her speak thoroughly. There's a comedian that did an interview, and he said it's nice when you can have more than 5 seconds to answer a question, so there's a lot of progress, I think, in getting her message out and getting the conversations going that need to be talked about that are obviously being avoided in this election with all kinds of circuses and whatnot. And so I think it's a real step forward. I think more people are going to really resonate with her. They're going to wake up to her. And a step in would be maybe Michelle Obama will be the candidate, and maybe Marianne Williamson will be invited on the cabinet.
Who knows? We'll see what happens. We'll hold the space for an upgrade to love.
Yeah, an upgrade for sure. And she could start. She could be invited to start her Department of Peace with any candidate, whoever wins. So there's lots
of
possibilities.
The space.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Thank you for letting me say all that. I didn't know that I was going to, but... Yes.
That's cool. Holding the space for you. And I just sent you Jeannie's phone number so you can text her directly if you don't have it correct.
Yeah, I guess I had two of them, and that wasn't the right one that I chose.
Okay.
Okay,
well
you've
got
you.
It now. It's in your text.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry.
All right. Are you going to be joining us for Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing Saturday? Are you going to make it? I know you were taking a sabbatical there, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I have to work out carving out the space for it, you know,
okay.
My partner. But yeah.
Well, it's this Saturday and Sunday, so let us know.
Yes, it is. Okay. All right. Thank you. I will. All right. Thank you.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye.
I'll come with it. Bye.
All right.
Okay. And the next number is 808. Miss Roma. Hi. How are you?
Well, we haven't heard your voice
Hello,
in a long time. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, it's interesting to me that the conversation has turned to Marianne. I was very much a supporter of hers, and she did drop out of the race on Monday, and there was an official, because I got a personal email from her regarding that, and
well, that's too bad.
I feel hopeful that her voice might continue,
because she definitely was putting out a higher level of thought than the average politician.
Yeah, higher frequency. Yeah, I was looking at my finances, and I had her on an auto pay supporting her campaign. And Monday I looked at that, and I thought, oh, I guess I'll take that out. And then I thought, no, I'm leaving it in, because she probably has post expenses to pay for, too. So I'm still supporting her for a while. But
awesome.
Just thought I'd, yeah. So, thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. Well, appreciate you letting us know.
Oh, okay. Aloha.
All right. Blessings. Take care. Aloha. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. I think that got all of our hands. Somebody else? Press one and put your hand up. So you've got 23
all right,
minutes.
Well, let's move forward. I'm going to lay a
All
foundation
right.
for linking the last step to the next step. And I'm going to take us back. I'm going to actually continue with this theme because it is so much a key to the whole comprehension of what this teaching is about in terms of its real purpose, and its purpose is to transform a life. You know, if you listen to Yeshua, he says, he's got a single, very single-minded. And he doesn't say, I come to bring you doctrine, I come to bring you dogma. But he says, I come to bring you life. And recognizing that the importance of the passage we covered last week, which I'll repeat once again, the light or the guide for your earthly life is perception. There, if your perception is without fault, your whole life shall be enlightened. That's what Yeshua comes to bring, is an enlightened life. Not dogma, not doctrine. He goes on to say in this passage, and as it comes out of the Aramaic, if your perception be unfit, that is, if there's hostility or fear in your perception, your whole life shall be darkened by it. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? In other words, if your perceptual mind has content that's based in hostility or fear, then the light for your earthly life is out. You're in darkness. Now, you may be the most brilliant person in the world speaking from a place of hostility and fear, and in terms of actuality, in terms of living a human life, your lights are out. You're done. You're finished. And what Yeshua's work is about is nothing that the churches have been doing, unless they're doing that, but bring us back to getting this mind on track and living as a human being. As that line in the course that I repeated earlier, you may take thought for nothing, careless of everything except the one purpose that you would fulfill. And for me, that's the reason for this radio show. That's the reason I've been doing the work I've been doing for the last 50 years in developing this. And that's the reason why we're doing the Enlightenment, is to fulfill that purpose. So when you recognize the importance of that passage, that the whole core of it is to get the light for your earthly life, get your lights back on, then you hear many people who speak about that, and let's take the word about literally. About means around the edge of. And so many people speak around the edge of that and have no idea what the core and the crux of it is. And what we want, because it's usually left out, what we want to do is get to the core and the crux of it. Now, we can hear many people who will talk about the result. You know, you look into virtually every preacher, and, you know, as the ones I spoke about earlier, who will say, yeah, and we're going to be about, you know, living the life we're supposed to. And then they'll go into their rage and their pain and their trauma and their condemnation and their separation and their guilt and forget what the real purpose was. We can go back through some of the root words about this topic and yet never get to the cause of it. There are lots of words about the effect, and everybody wants the effect. But where's the cause? What's the cause? And so my objective in doing the Enlightenment, you know, this text, Enlightenment, was a journey for me. It was a something that I started 40-some years ago, and, you know, designed Laws of Living, or co-authored, co-designed Laws of Living with Dr. Dan McDougald for the prison system. And so my objective in bringing this forward is to give you everything that I can from my experience, hopefully that it will serve you. But if we listen to the result that people are looking for, let's look at some of the places. I did a little bit of research, and there are a few places we'll find words about this result. Judaism says this: you shall not hate your kinsfolk in your heart. Reprove your kinsman, but incur no guilt because of him. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your countrymen. Love your fellow as yourself. Now, the big mistake here is a darkened mind thinks the word love is a verb. So it gives you instructions to love your neighbor. We're going to suggest you never even attempt to love your neighbor or yourself, because that's a mistake. That's where the fall happens. We're going to suggest you put your effort into dealing with the cause of the experience of yourself as love. That the focal point is, you know, if you have a thousand conversations about the effect, but you have no idea what the cause of that effect is, you're fishing in the dark with the mind whose perception is darkened. Another statement goes like this: I hereby accept upon myself the commandment of the Creator to love my neighbor as myself. There is no commandment of the Creator to love your neighbor as yourself. Again, the mistaken belief that love is a verb. And I've labored under that mistaken belief for a long time. And it's to change the meaning of that is huge in people's lives, because there's much to be given up. Again, another reading of it, and this tends to sound more like churchianity and more like, you know, religion. But again, my offering is none of this has anything to do with religion. It's been turned into religion, but it's got to do with living a human life and living where we're designed to live. So if we go to the New Testament, we hear the statement, thou shalt love the Lord thy God. Like love is a verb. With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And, of course, that implies that it's a verb. We just lost the whole game if we're playing out of that belief, that misunderstanding. There's a famous rabbi named Hillel, and there's a story about a man who came to him and said, quote, you will convert me on the condition that you can teach me the entire Torah while I'm standing on one foot. And he converted him. And here's what Hillel said. That which is hateful to do, do not do to another. That is the entire Torah, and the rest is interpretation. Go study. Pretty brilliant piece of information from Hillel. He taught him the whole sum and substance of the law with one sentence. And notice he didn't say, love your neighbor. Now, his regulatory speech isn't all that hot. He's talking about not being hateful. But when he says, go study, you can now go and study all the words in the creation. And if you don't have an accurate description of the tools for producing that result, you're listening to words about a result without understanding what the cause is. You know, go against what Hillel said and say, no, don't go and study, go and do the work. And I can remember a Laws of Living class. Dan McDougall was at Heartland. Some of you are listening might have been there at that class. And you'd remember that particular class because, and I don't remember what her name was, there was a woman in the class who was a minister in a local church. So if you were in that class, you'll remember this, because our whole class took Sunday morning and went to her church because she was preaching. And if you remember, the particular Bible that they were quoting from, and I made a point of this when we got back after the class, because she just happened to be speaking on this very topic that day. And for me, it was like one, it is the biggest insight that I have ever gotten while working with Dan in Laws of Living. Because beyond that statement about, and if we translate properly, it doesn't say love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first great command, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as yourself. It says have rachma for the creator. And have rachma for your neighbor, or when you think of your neighbor. And that by having rachma, you're engaging in cause. And by so engaging, you maintain self. You get to live as a human being when you have the gateway open in your mind, rachma being a gateway that brings active love into, creates a space for active love to enter our human forms, for our human lives to be fully incarnated. It comes through that gateway. And this particular weekend at Laws of Living, if you happen to be at that class, you might remember the discussion when we got back, because the particular translation of the Bible that they had sitting in the pews, I remember picking it up, and I just had this insight. Here, in just following up in this passage, are the 11 most important words that have ever been spoken on planet Earth. My offering. Actually, very shortly after, like the next week, I started to write a book that was called The 11 Most Important Words Ever Spoken. What do you suppose those words were? The passage that follows up this misinterpretation, this as love your neighbor, that avoids the cause, it leaves, you know, the cause word was dropped out, and we were told to love our neighbor, love the creator, as we do ourselves, but rather the word rachma has been lost, was to have rachma for the creator, rachma for neighbor, and when we do that, the gateway being open for human life to enter our human forms, that in the presence of the creator or neighbor, we get to maintain our human lives. And then what it says is, on these two commandments hang the law and all the prophets. When we understand that, they're the most important words that have ever been spoken. And when I got that piece of information, when I got that insight, because I had a long conversation with Dan about it, but I got on the phone, you know, with the work I'd been doing, this is going back, 30 years ago, maybe 25, I don't know exactly. But the work I'd been doing, I got to know a lot of people in the religious world. And that over the next day or two, I picked up the phone and I asked the question of everybody that I knew in religious life if they'd ever understood what the importance of these words were. And I remember that I totaled up the number of years of religious experience that I had talked to. I knew this priest who'd been a priest for 15 years and a minister that had been a minister for 30 years and a rabbi that had been a rabbi for and a nun. And I literally called everybody that I knew and with excitement and said, do you know what this means? And there was one of them that had a clue. Just like, it's just kind of just another word in the Bible, another line in the Bible, but it's not. When you recognize that passage, tie this together with correcting perception, that you want to get perception on track with love. Of course, to get perception on track with love, love's got to be there. You can't have a system run by hostility or fear and have a perceptual system on track with love. And so what the genius, the brilliant piece of insight that's given in this passage is, if you think of the creator, if you think of neighbor, and you can maintain this gateway called Rachma open, then you maintain your human life. And everything hangs on that. Like, that's the first order of business. And if you don't do the first order of business, then what use is anything else? So for upon this hangs, it's like, don't even bother going to the law and the prophets. It's like these preachers I was talking about that are doing all this raging and ready to murder people and, you know, wanting to exclude their neighbors from the country because they're immigrants. And I mean, the whole thing. Don't even bother with the law and the prophets until you've accomplished this, because without this, you will not see the message of love in that book, but rather you'll read it through your own filters of hostility or fear and put in the mouth of the prophets the messages that were never intended by them. You won't be able to read their words accurately. A mind with hostility or fear cannot comprehend words based in love. So what do we have today? Well, all kinds of people talk about love, right? Sexual athletics, self-sacrifice, all kinds of crazy things. None of those things have anything to do with us functioning as human beings. So people hear the law and the prophets through a perceptual system that darkness is the light, i.e. the guide they follow is that of hostility or fear, and they read things like, for instance, you know, Moses, an eye for an eye. How many times have you heard it said? Even Moses said an eye for an eye. Even Moses gave us permission to take vengeance. No, he didn't. That's a mind darkened by hostility or fear reading Moses. If you read Moses with Rachma active in your mind, you know that Moses is saying, okay, you guys, if you have to do your vengeance, the limit of your vengeance is an eye for an eye. If somebody took your eye out, okay, the very limit of it is you can take their eye, but you can't go slaughter their whole family, which was what was happening back then. If somebody knocks a tooth out, and if you got to have vengeance, Moses isn't giving permission for vengeance. He's putting a cap on it, saying you can't do any more than this. So the prime message of this, the ancient scriptures, is to be responsible for and remove from your mind all hostility or fear so that you get this guide, this light for your earthly life back on track, where you actually live 24/7, 365 out of the place of love. And when you're not, you have a conversation about yourself, not everybody else, and you bring your own mind to correction so that it gets back on track with love. A mind based in hostility or fear cannot reduce stress. A mind based in love, in the presence of love, can reduce stress. This is the royal road for living out of that mind of love in you. And this man, Yeshua, is not designed to be shown to us as the exception. You know, people are still looking at him as exceptional. He doesn't claim to be exceptional. He says, hey, the things I do, you can do, and greater. And I've heard people try and change that one. Well, yeah, but that was just in certain circumstances that, you know, he didn't really mean that. He's not the exception. He's the example of what a human life looks like. And upon the understanding of this cause called Rachma hangs everything that's written in that book. And if you read it through a perceptual system based in hostility or fear, you'll distort every word. And, you know, just go take a look at the distortions that have happened. Oh, yeah, everybody's using the word love, but do you find the actual active presence of compassion, carrying the ability to embrace? Let's take Yeshua in that example I used earlier of the woman who's caught in adultery. Does he grudgingly say, well, we'll see if we can save you? No. He is active present love. He is the living example of Rachma. Not the exception. He's showing what it looks like. And what's it going to look like? Well, there isn't going to be any condemnation in it. There'll be accountability. And you notice the places where he went for accountability were those who were pretending to know and didn't know and were doing manipulation and taking advantage of people. So we're looking to tap into and function out of the example as human beings. That's the whole purpose of this study. So what I'm going to do tomorrow, depending on whether we have questions or what have you, in this state where I had this just moment of wow, probably one of the biggest wows of all of the work that I've done over the last 50 years was, oh, everything hangs on this. These are the 11 most important words ever spoken, and I started to write a book on it. Oh, actually, this takes us into the timeline, because I was probably about 2 years out of working on the book when I met Jeannie. And one of our first conversations, I read the first couple of chapters to her over the phone before we ever physically met. So that's about the timeline. So this is about probably at Laws of Living 22, maybe 23 years ago. So I started to work on this book that was called The 11 Most Important Words Ever Spoken. And as a result of an experience that I had while I was writing it, the title of it changed. And the title of it changed to the end of suffering. And so tomorrow, when we finish with questions, I will explain what the experience was and why the title changed from the 11 most important words ever spoken to the end of suffering.